following is a presentation of Learfield IMG College. From the Georgia Southern Sports Network, powered by Learfield IMG College.
Wings up, Eagle Nation! Touchdown, Georgia Southern!
This is Inside Eagle Nation, your all-access look into Eagle athletics.
Taking a look through all the other action in Georgia Southern athletics this past week. A lot of road action. A lot of teams hitting the old I-16 out of town.
Getting on the steel horse and taking us to parts north, south, west, wherever. Can't really go too much farther east.
Now, let's return to the Learfield IMG College studios. Here are your hosts, Colin Lacey and Danny Reed.
That's a fact, Jack.
Welcome into another edition of Inside Eagle Nation, your all-access look into Georgia Southern Athletics. Colin Lacey alongside the voice of the Eagle, Danny Reed, for episode number 123 of Inside Eagle Nation.
Moving right along.
We say it every week. Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday.
So we get set for this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation, a special edition, because we're going to have a very special guest a little bit later on this week.
Yeah, this is... We're going to test technology here to see if we can pull this off.
We're going to be testing a lot.
Yeah, that's true.
But as always, Inside Eagle Nation is presented by our good friends at Arcola Septic. Arcola Septic is your premier septic services provider to Bullock, Bryan, and adjoining counties, and a great family-owned business that's run by a pair of Georgia Southern alumni. Make sure to give them a call at 912-318-7939 or visit them online at arcolaseptic.com. For both commercial and residential customers, their more than 10 years of experience can help you out with pumping and servicing your septic system, drain field repairs, new system installation, and all of your septic needs. Remember to follow them on Facebook, Arcola Septic, yesterday's Meals on Wheels. We dive into everything Georgia Southern Athletics in this past week. A couple of teams off. Men's golf had this week off. But women's golf currently up in Chattanooga at the Chattanooga Classic. After two rounds in the first day yesterday, they were tied for fifth. They teed off this morning at 8:50, and as we check the leaderboards, Georgia Southern now somewhere between holes 2 and 4. They are 30 over par, still in fifth place by their lonesome, trying to chase James Madison, which is fourth. East Tennessee State leads the way at 14 over par. Iowa and Chattanooga are tied at 18 over. And they are just getting started here this morning. But Georgia Southern Golf, a full day of golf still yet to be played. Shot a 300 yesterday as a team in the second round to move them into fifth overall.
So what you're telling me is that they are either on the second tee box, the fourth green, or somewhere amidst all of that.
That's what GolfStat tells me.
Okay.
I think that's what that tells me.
I'd like to stay on the green.
Yeah, me too. Doesn't normally happen, though. Georgia Southern men's tennis last Tuesday got the victory 4-1 against South Carolina State here at the Wallace Tennis Center, and then went up to Georgia State and fell in Atlanta 7-0 on Saturday. Friday, they'll have a 10 a.m. first serve at Troy, and then continue Sunbelt Conference play on Saturday, make the trip down to South Alabama, 10 a.m. the first serve against the Jaguars for men's tennis.
Unfortunately, we won't be down there with baseball this time like we were with women a couple weeks ago. That actually sounded about kind of nice.
It did. Had Sean McCaffrey and the women's tennis team coming in on Saturday afternoon, I think it was.
Yep.
Georgia Southern women's tennis won all three matches this past week, got the 4-0 sweep over Mercer on Wednesday, 4-0 against Coastal Carolina on Saturday, and then 4-1 against Appalachian State on Sunday. All of that here at the Wallace Tennis Center in Statesboro. So a good week for women's tennis. They look to continue that. Supposed to have another matchup up in Macon against the Mercer Bears, but that one was canceled earlier this week due to COVID concerns with Mercer. And then they will head to Atlanta at Georgia State, 10 a.m. the first serve on Saturday. Then they'll return home against Emory on Sunday for Senior Day, a 1 p.m. first serve.
Okay, that could be something to figure out. How close is the tennis facility for Georgia State to Panthersville?
I'm going to guess about 5 miles, but about 45 minutes.
Yeah, especially this weekend. That's probably a safe bet.
Yep. Georgia Southern women's soccer fell 3-0 to number 25 Ole Miss on Saturday. That wraps up the spring portion of their schedule, and we talked about it. It's a little bit different of a year, especially under first-year head coach Chris Adams, who gets to coach the final was scheduled to be 4, but turned out to be 3 because having to cancel the home match against North Florida. But to get 3 essentially I don't want to call them preseason because they still count towards the season of the 2020 season for women's soccer. But for Coach Adams, you almost get kind of a preseason matchup with your team.
It was just like with volleyball. They played during the fall, but then they had a couple of spring matches, which count in the same way towards the previous calendar. And with this instance, new coach, pandemic, even though we're inching towards the end of that, to be able to pick up a road victory at Stetson and then to challenge themselves against a pair of SEC teams, you got to think those are experiences that are going to be valuable once they get towards the fall and back towards what is hopefully a normal season.
And we've talked about it a lot. This year has been crazy. But the fact that there are teams that are still playing volleyball, soccer, and are getting ready for their tournament, it seems very odd to say in March.
And the FCS is playing football.
Yeah, I for some reason I still get the emails from the SoCon about football. And so our buddy Phil Perry still sends me stuff about SoCon football.
I did see that Chattanooga opted out for the rest of the spring, but we do see some scores and some games periodically throughout the week, just depending on where we are baseball-wise. I'm wondering how that's going to go in the future, if the FCS is going to opt for a spring season or if they will try to pack two seasons worth, even though it's not a full spring, but if they're going to try to play upwards of 16 games in a year, it may even be more than that. But I also think about teams like in Eastern Kentucky or a Central Arkansas during the fall that were able to play almost a full schedule. They said, look, this is all well and good trying to bump to the spring and take our time and see how things are going to go and what COVID may or may not do. But those teams, especially Central Arkansas, they were on national television several times. They were the very first game at the Crampton Bowl against Austin Peay. First play of the season was a 75-yard touchdown run for Austin Peay, even though Central Arkansas picked up that win. But I applaud them for having the faith to go forward like they did. And even for these teams, you have to have a measure of respect for what they're trying to do now, even though that the future may not be as easy if they're trying to do two seasons in one calendar year. That may be a challenge.
So women's soccer has officially finished the 2020 season now with the loss to Ole Miss. They look ahead to 2021, and talking to Chris Adams, he's pretty excited about what this squad can really do when you get a full off season, get a full training sessions, and be able to go into a full season.
And in the case of trying to develop a program, you're hoping that the moratorium on in-person recruiting is going to be lifted. It seems like it may be sooner than later. And we talked about that with men's basketball this year, how Brian Berg and his staff had to put together the team on FaceTime and Zoom, and you don't get to shake a hand until you get to shake the hand in Statesboro. You're not going to somebody's house. You're not going to watch them play live. So you're seeing how that can affect the team-building process at the outset. But if you can normalize things, get in front of someone before you actually have them come play for you and commit part of their lives to you, then I think that that's going to level things out a little bit and at least make us feel what we were feeling back in just a couple of years ago.
Georgia Southern softball had a busy weekend of travel. We talked about it last week, how they had rescheduled the three-game series against Louisiana.
Right.
Strangely enough, we're going to get a little bit of Cajun culture here in a little bit with Jay Walker.
That's called a tease.
Yes. But started off on Friday with a doubleheader against FIU. It was supposed to be a three-game series, but because Georgia Southern having to travel to Louisiana, the Saturday game got axed. Friday got the victory in both of the doubleheader games, 5-0 in the first against FIU, 9-7 in the second game of the doubleheader on Friday. Then about 4:30 in the morning, I think they left Statesboro on Saturday to get down to Acadiana. And we talked about it on the game, that 4:30 does not come twice a day for me. Sunday, it was a 9-2 loss at number 16, Louisiana. And then it had a doubleheader yesterday starting at 5 o'clock. It was a 6-0 loss at the hands of the Cajuns in the first game and then 7-3 in the second one. The second game of the doubleheader on Monday, Georgia Southern was up 2-0 for much of the first part of that game. But again, we've talked about the culture that Louisiana has, and we're going to talk about it with Jay in just a few minutes. But the culture that Louisiana has of expecting to be in the top 25, if not the top 10, every year.
Look, the fact that they're number 16 in the country right now, that's behind where they feel that they should be. They look at going to the Women's College World Series every year. That is their standard. This is a team that has been a national power for a while. Despite changing head coaches, they have kept their tradition. They're able to load up from the transfer market, and they're able to develop their own talent. That's just something that they have. Lampson Park is one of the tougher places to play. Just ask LSU. When they actually go there, it's a really good program, and I would put that softball program above many baseball programs that we see throughout the course of our travels doing Georgia Southern games.
This weekend, Georgia Southern softball will hit the road once again. They'll be over in Troy, Alabama, Friday and Saturday. Friday, a 6 p.m. first pitch, and then Saturday, a doubleheader starting at 1 o'clock. We've teased it up to now, but we are going to have Jay Walker, the voice of the Raging Cajuns, coming on to talk about, since it is a odd week in the Sun Belt Conference with games starting Thursday, Friday, and Saturday because of Easter weekend, a big push for that was Tony Robichaud, the former head coach for the Raging Cajuns that we've talked about a lot, especially since his passing a couple of years ago, but was a big driving force in that. I know Jay knew him very well and the impact that it had on him, and so we're going to talk to Jay in just a moment. But before we dive into that, you had the opportunity to go out to spring football practice that started this past week and being able to see it live. What was it like while I get Jay on the phone?
It was nice to actually be on the field for a practice, and I can't remember the last time that that had happened, but just to be at field level to see some of the new guys, granted it was weird not seeing Rashad Bird and Raymond Johnson and Shai Wirtz and some of the guys that we just got to know so well over these last 4 and 5 years, but this is a transitional season with so many new coaches. You've met a few of them already via the Facebook Lives and some of the press conferences that we've done over the last few days. It's always going to be anticipated when you're speaking about Georgia Southern football. We know the spring game is coming up April the 24th. Unfortunately, we're going to be in Oklahoma with Eagle Baseball, so we won't be here for that in the reverse raffle. But there's a lot of reason to be excited for the infusion of talent from the transfer market and from some of the mid-year freshman enrollees. They're going to get everybody fired up.
As we have talked about a lot in this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation, a special guest now joining us on the phone, the voice of the Raging Cajuns, Jay Walker. Jay, appreciate you joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. Life is good.
Now, I know you've just got off one interview, so you're almost talked out, but I didn't think that would ever come out of you, right?
No, I'm good.
We just talked about Georgia Southern softball down in Louisiana against number 16, the Raging Cajuns, and give us an idea of what the softball culture is really like in Louisiana before we dive into baseball.
Well, you know, the softball culture is really, there aren't too many places in America like it. You know, of course, with COVID and the pandemic and social distancing and reduced attendance and all of that stuff, you know, there were only about maybe 250 people at the doubleheader last night. It's the first chance I've had to see the softball team play this year. Under normal circumstances, you know, they average about 1,800, and the capacity at Lampson Park is about 2,700. And, you know, when they have really good teams come in, you know, if a Texas or a Baylor or an Alabama comes in, they'll come close to selling out the place. Softball fans are very, very passionate. Some of them are also baseball fans. Some of them aren't. Some of them just do softball. But, you know, the program has been good for a very long time. I mean, it's been a top 20 program for the better part of 30 years now. And so it's, as a result, it's very well entrenched, and the fan support's great.
Okay. In regards to the stretch, do they do center field as well, or is that something that is specific to Raging Cajun baseball?
No, that's a baseball thing.
Okay.
You know, they do something. They play a song in the fifth inning, and all of the workers that are there, they kind of like dance on the concourse, and folks get up and dance in their seats. They have their own tradition, but it isn't center field.
Okay.
For diving into Sun Belt Conference baseball, you've seen a lot of it over the years. What has Sun Belt Conference, before we dive into what Easter weekend really looks like, in your time during Sun Belt Conference baseball, where's the biggest change you've seen?
Well, you know, besides the fact that there's been a lot of change as far as membership is concerned, what I see now is you could always depend on two, sometimes three, and even on occasion four teams go into the NCAA tournament. Now, with the proliferation of baseball in the Big Ten, where now they're getting 4, 5, and 6 bids, I think that with very few exceptions, and the American probably is one, Conference USA occasionally will be one as well, I think you're looking at the Sun Belt now as basically a one-bid league. Because they're just, if you go ahead and you put 10 teams from the ACC, 10 teams from the SEC, 7 teams from the Big 12, you know, 6 or 7 teams from the Pac-12, and another half dozen from the Big 10. If you look, there's just not a lot of room for at-large teams in the NCAA baseball tournament anymore. So teams are going to have to be really, really good in order for the Sun Belt to be able to get more than one bid, which is going to make that conference tournament every year huge.
We've talked about it already in this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation, but a big part and a big proponent for the way that the schedule looks now as far as Easter weekend being a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series across Sun Belt Conference baseball, a big proponent of that was Tony Robichaud, the former head coach for Louisiana. And take us through that process of why it was so important to Robe.
Well, you know, Robe was a very spiritual man. He was a very devout Catholic. And he just felt like it was wrong. And it burdened him. And he would bring it up every year at the coaches' meetings. And every year it would get discussed. And every year it would get voted down. And then what you saw was, first of all, you saw a little change in membership. And then you also saw some coaching changes. And so, you know, a few years ago, he brought it up again, and it was debated. Now, Ty Harrington, the coach at Texas State, was really instrumental in getting baseball off of Sunday when he was in the Southland Conference. So Tony had a guy standing right next to him also being a big proponent. And, you know, he told me the story. One of the coaches started talking about, you know, pitching rotation getting messed up and an extra day of travel. And Tony just looked at him and he said, "Do you understand we're talking about honoring a man who died for you?" And that was the end of the discussion. It passed, and we haven't played on Easter Sunday since.
You know, for several teams in the league this year, you're looking at 4 games in 5 days, or if you're Little Rock, you're playing 4 straight days because of a postponement against Pine Bluff. They're going to play Wednesday, then have to leave for Jonesboro on Thursday morning. But the fact that even though it is a Thursday through Saturday, you get a chance to do this against your geographic rival or your actual rival, however you want to slice it, it seems like that was a really good decision that the league made.
I think that was a great decision because, you know, with exception of App State and Coastal, which is, I don't know, 5-6 hours, you know, you've got Arlington and Texas State, 3 hours, Jonesboro and Little Rock, 2.5, Monroe and Lafayette, 3 hours, Troy and South Alabama, 2.5, and I guess you're 3, 3.5 from Atlanta. That means that you can go ahead and play that game on Saturday, get home at a decent hour Saturday night, and then you've got your Sunday when you're fresh, as opposed to getting back at 1 o'clock Sunday morning and have your day be ruined because you don't want to get out of bed.
Yeah.
So I think that was a great move on the part of the league. I'm critical of the league a lot, but this was a big-time positive change.
Visiting with the voice of the Raging Cajuns down in Louisiana, Jay Walker, and another big person in this move was somebody that I know you were really fond of, former commissioner of the Sun Belt Conference, Carl Benson.
Carl is, Carl did, I didn't agree with everything Carl did, but I will say this. I thought that he navigated this conference through some very troubled times because that was at the time when you had folks leaving, you know, Western Kentucky and Middle Tennessee left about then. And, you know, you go ahead, you bring a team in and then somebody else would decide to leave. And, you know, in order to get to 12, you brought in New Mexico State and Idaho, and that was a terrible fit. When the NCAA said, thanks to the Big 12, that you can have 10 teams and still have a championship game, that's when everything fell into place. And you know, Idaho and New Mexico State got jettisoned, and they needed a 10th football member. And that's how Coastal Carolina became a part of this league. And I thought he navigated some very, very tough times. But Carl, a lot of people don't realize, he started as a baseball coach. He was the baseball coach at Boise State years ago. And so baseball's always been very, very important to him. And, you know, I think that he did some very good things while he was there, you know, concerning how the tournament got run and how baseball got run to begin with. And I give him a lot of credit for that.
It seems like, for whatever reason, the Sun Belt Conference doesn't want you, Danny, and I to get together very much this year. But what's the Western Division kind of look like as far as baseball from what you've seen?
Well, you know, Texas State was picked to win the West, and they're 2-4. I mean, they got swept at Little Rock, and they narrowly beat ULM 2 out of 3. You know, Little Rock's 3-game sweep of Texas State, and then they went up to Southern Illinois, who was like 19-1, and they won 2 out of 3 up there. Yeah. So it looks like Chris Curry's team has got a pretty good club. You know, what I'm seeing just looking around the league, there are a couple of teams, and I'm going to specifically say Georgia Southern and Troy, that can really swing the bat well. And there are a couple of teams, and I think it's Louisiana and South Alabama, that can really, really pitch. And then after that, it's kind of a hodgepodge, you know, and depending on what arm you got there in any given day, I don't know that there's a lot of elite pitching in this league. Everybody's got a Friday guy, and some of the Friday guys, and I think Aaron Funk at Little Rock, and I think the guy that you've got at Georgia Southern, I think you've got some guys who are pretty elite. But from what I've been able to tell, the pitching has been kind of pedestrian. And so this year, it may be all about who can consistently hit the baseball as far as, you know, who's going to get navigate the tournament. And the tournament is very different this year. Yeah. But who can navigate that? Tony Robichaud used to say, you pitch your way to a tournament and you hit your way through the tournament. I think that this year, that's going to be very, very true.
It's going to be a lot of fun to hang out with you guys over at Riverwalk Stadium in Montgomery. Jay, appreciate you joining us.
Thanks so much for having us. And you know, I'm looking forward to it, too, because I kind of miss you guys.
Thanks, Jay. Once again, that is the voice of the Raging Cajuns, Jay Walker, a absolute national treasure.
I'm glad that worked.
Yeah, me too.
I'm glad he was the first one, too.
Yeah, oh, there was no doubt who was going to be the first.
Now we're going to get some flack on the text line and the group meetings about why he was the first one, but guys, come on, it was...
And he's somebody that we've had on the podcast before, and I think we've talked about it. He's the only opponent radio that we've had on the podcast before. When we went into, I believe it was our first Sun Belt Conference tournament, we did an interview with him just kind of chronicling what the Sun Belt Conference tournament has looked like before. But he's been around. He's a baseball guy just like you and I. And being able to share what the Sun Belt Conference has gone through and what it looks like now has been really, really valuable.
Especially from the standpoint of where we are right now, this Easter weekend, and the fact that we no longer play baseball on Sunday, which is an outstanding rule, and I think that it should be college baseball-wide. I don't think that anybody should be playing on Easter Sunday. There's still a couple of leagues logistically that I think need to, but hopefully that they can do what the Sun Belt has done, realize why it's a good decision, and if they could set it up where, like the league has, be able to do it with your travel partner. I know some leagues aren't as fortunate to be as geographically located as the Sun Belt is, but if they could find a way across other leagues to work that out, just have Sunday as being almost a, let's find some family, let's find some friends, let's just enjoy being around each other, and let's not have to worry about baseball for a day. I think that would be a really good thing if we could get that universally done eventually.
Yeah. You dive into Georgia Southern baseball. Last week it was 4 games. The first started at SRP Park in North Augusta, South Carolina against the Clemson Tigers last Tuesday. And it was some kind of baseball game. It ended up being a 6-4 Clemson victory on a 2-run pinch hit home run that walked it off for the Tigers in the bottom of the 9th inning. But Georgia Southern was down in 90% of the game. You go to the top of the 9th inning, you're down by 1. And a bloop RBI triple to left by Sammy Blancato got the job done. It tied the ball game up at four. Then, as we talked about, the pinch hit home run in the bottom half.
What made that such a zany play, number one, it was with two outs. And it's just a little pop that was down the third base line. It barely got to left field. And remember, Clemson had brought in a new left fielder at the start of the inning. Bo Mikowski was playing just his second game all year. And you can say what you want to about how the situation ended up going. But at the same time, you had third, short, and left all collapsing on this little pop-up. Stephen Curry was going to score. It's just a matter of whether or not it was going to count if the ball would have dropped in fair territory. When it did, Curry touched home, and then third base was unoccupied by the time Sammy had already gotten to second. So he's thinking, okay, I'm fast enough. I think I can get there. So it was a race to the bag between Sammy and Clemson's third baseman to try to figure out if this game was going to have another batter, at least the inning was going to have another batter. He gets to third. Unfortunately, the run doesn't come in, and then Clemson, we saw from their sports information, that was the first time in Clemson history they had a pinch hit walk-off home run for a school that's done all that they have done baseball-wise with conference championships, College World Series runs under Jack Leggan, and we know the relationship that he and Rodney Hennen have from their days at Western Carolina. Yeah, you're down 3-0 in the first inning, but the team continued to fight. They just didn't get the big hit, and I think that that's been a theme where if they've gotten down early, you haven't seen a late comeback like so many Eagle teams have done the last few years. And there's a stat that Georgia Southern has to be leading the league in this category. But there's been, I think, the last 3 years, there's been 35 games where Georgia Southern has won when trailing at some point after the sixth inning.
Wow.
That doesn't mean they went into the inning trailing, but at some point from the sixth inning on, they've trailed. They don't have one of those wins this year. Really, their only comeback win this season, you could say East Carolina to a degree, but that was – but the UAB game when the Blazers scored six runs in the fourth, it was 6-3 at that point. Eagles got two in the fifth. Then they got their offense late against the UAB bullpen. And I'm wondering if that's something that's going to kick in. But at the same time, we've talked about how good Georgia Southern has been to start games. They're 8-0 when they score in the first inning. Even if it's one run, they're 8-0 when they get out quickly. Maybe the pitching staff takes a key or takes a cue and they're just naturally energized by what they've seen from the offense. It really helped Troy because that got that series off on just a phenomenal foot with the two runs in the first inning down there a few weeks back. But for whatever reason, every team takes on its own personality. But if you're going to be a team that wins a conference championship, you got to find a way to rally late. And I think that that's something we'll see eventually.
Georgia Southern will then go on to the conference weekend against Appalachian State here at J.I. Clements Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Friday, it was a 3-1 victory for Georgia Southern, and Tyler Owens was really good. Six innings strong, just giving up five hits, one unearned run, two walks, and six strikeouts, over 106 pitches. And that's kind of where you and I talked about it before the series, that going into the series, the bullpen had to throw, I think, 14 more pitches per game than the starters have thrown, which is opposite of what you would think. But Friday and Saturday, and we'll get to Dolander in a little bit, but really changed the tide of what a start versus relief is supposed to look like.
Oh, yeah, we'll get to Dolie plenty here in just a minute or so. It's the best the T.O. has looked all year, and it's one of the best starts I think I've seen from him. Ironically, some of his best performances have come against Troy 2 years ago. He went eight innings down there, gave up a run, and then in the conference tournament semifinals, he goes six shutout in Conway to get the Eagles to the title matchup against the Chanticleers. It's becoming a point where T.O. is going to give you what you expect from that Friday role. He did it in a midweek setting to start his career, and you have to think when he first made it to the weekend, he struggled. It was different, but you put him back in the midweek, he found that success again. And then you put him back in the weekend, in the later portion of the weekend as a starter. That game against Troy, that was the finale of that three-game series 2 years ago at Riddle Pace. So he went eight, and the Eagles at that point were trying to avoid getting swept. So I think he found that confidence. Even a year ago, he was back in the midweek, but he was fantastic. One earned run over the course of 16 games before the shutdown. Now this year, started him out of the bullpen, long relief, and it turned out that it needed to be because of some struggles early on in those first 2 weekends against Tennessee and East Carolina, but what we expected and what ended up happening, had to find a way to get him on the mound when it mattered. You need that Friday game, especially in conference play. Now, he had a hiccup against UAB. He had a hiccup against Towson. And it seemed like there was one moment in each of those games that knocked him off course. But the last two weekends against a really good Troy lineup, and we saw how good that Troy lineup was the next two games, and then against App State, he struck out the final batter he saw after App had gotten a questionable run on a bases-loaded hit-by-pitch. And the lead was only one at that point, so a base hit, you're trailing. But he locked in, and he continues to pick up these big strikeouts. He's not a strikeout guy, but he finds a way to place them in situations where they're absolutely vital.
And we talked about it on Friday and then leading into Saturday, how Tyler Owens isn't going to necessarily blow you away with the speed. He's 87 to 90, but whenever App was late on Tyler Owens, you thought it set up well for Chase Dolander on Saturday. And you look at it, it's a 10-2 final score, but seven of those runs came technically after Dolander had finished.
Correct.
While he was on the mound, it was a 3-0 ball game.
Yeah.
And then the way he goes, 6 innings, 2 hits, no runs, 13 strikeouts over 106 pitches.
He was able to work his fastball high, but not so high that App was taking it. The week before against Troy, it was a lot of meatballs. They just jumped on him. It was an ambush. That's why he was out after 2 innings. He was able to get ahead in the count, a lot of 0-2s, and for Chase, when he's 0-2 with that repertoire and that power fastball, most of the time he is going to be in really good shape. And App just kept swinging. They could not take it because of how well he placed that fastball. Right around the chest, right where App State was going, no matter what jersey they were wearing, he found a way to induce those swings and misses. And I think that was the game that Georgia Southern struck out 17 overall for a new season high, but he was some kind of special on Saturday. He was really good.
Move on to Sunday edition for Georgia Southern and Appalachian State. And most of the time when you get to Sunbelt or to the Sunday game in the Sunbelt, you're kind of thinking it's a 8-7 type game, a 10-12 type game. You don't really know what you're going to get. Appalachian State has found something with their new Sunday starter in Noah Hall. It was just his second start on the Sunday, and the week prior, he had thrown 2 innings against Arkansas State on Friday, yeah, then came back and threw 5 innings on Sunday as the starter, but he came out, hadn't seen him all weekend, but came out and started on Sunday, and he was pretty good. 6 innings of work, just 1 run given up, 4 strikeouts over right around 80 pitches, and he was something that I don't know that we were necessarily expecting. We knew that his numbers were probably the best on that App State squad, but I don't know that I was expecting that.
He did for App Sunday what Dolander and Owens did for Georgia Southern the first two games. Rodney Hennen has said a million times, you can score all you want to, but if you cannot pitch and you cannot play defense, you are not going to consistently win. What did App do on Sunday? They pitched and they played defense. They made a lot of, yeah, I know it was a lot of snow cone grabs and a lot of look what I found. They're still making the plays. Georgia Southern committed 2 errors. They only gave up 4 hits. So from a pitching standpoint, they were there, gave themselves a chance to win. But that's how good Noah Hall was. Look, that changeup is pretty filthy.
Yeah.
We tried to watch a little bit of film on it. We talked to a couple people because there wasn't a whole lot to go off of. Didn't see App last year because of the shutdown. We had heard it was a plus changeup, maybe the best that we will see. No disrespect to Tyler Owens. I love T.O.'s changeup. It was really good. He was able to throw it right on right, which is not something you see a whole lot. And then out of the bullpen, they go back to the lefty, Eli Ellington, who had thrown 2 2/3 Friday. You know, in one vein, you thought, okay, they hadn't thrown their two most experienced guys, Andrew Papp and Jason Kornatzer, so maybe we would see them. But Kermit Smith looked down and saw, look, my boy Ellington just got 2 2/3 scoreless on Friday. I'm going to put him out there, see what he can do. What helped him finish the game is that 7-pitch seventh inning.
Yeah.
1-2-3 and 7 pitches. Didn't really get into trouble until the ninth when you had those walks. And I still think that Stephen Curry would have reached. That pitch looked off the plate, and you can say what you want to now. App ended up winning the series. But if Georgia Southern takes advantage a little bit earlier, maybe they don't have to worry about it in the ninth inning. It never comes down to one play. You can never put it on a single play because there's just so much that happens before that. And Noah Hall was good. You give him credit because he was good. He had his changeup. He had his fastball. And Georgia Southern had to make 4 or 5 really good defensive plays so they didn't get down by more than 2 runs. And Robbie Young hit a homer over the monster for App, but think about the plays that Swan made, that Curry made. Thompson made a tumbling play behind second on the ball that McGowan hit. So you don't make any of those plays. Maybe you're down 4 or 5 runs, and it's probably not going to happen anyway, but at least there was a chance despite not taking the finale, but won the series.
It's another four-game week for Georgia Southern baseball. It starts tonight right here at J.I. Clements Stadium. 6 o'clock first pitch against the College of Charleston Cougars coming up tonight. And then it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday against the Georgia State Panthers. For this CFC team, it's a team that has struggled a little bit this season, 7-11 coming in, but off one of their better weekends this year as they took on the UNC Wilmington and won the final two games in those, scored double digits in both of those games. And that's a UNC Wilmington team that was picked to win the CAA in the preseason.
Now, they looked like it on Friday, beat them 6-1, and it was a pretty handy victory. But then CFC finds its big bats in game two. Harrison Hawkins hits two home runs, including a grand slam. Ari Sakopoulos hit his third home run of the week. And then yesterday, they had a 5-0 lead, Wilmington had the 5-0 lead in the second. CFC scores 9 unanswered. Then Wilmington scores 4 in the top of the ninth to tie it. CFC walks off on a 2-out error in the bottom half to win the series, and I think that they need that pretty badly. They were on a COVID pause 2 weeks ago. They had 4 games wiped out. They were supposed to have a midweek against Jacksonville and then a conference series at Charlotte, but that was all canceled because of their own COVID concerns. They were out for 10 days officially. They began their week up at Coastal Carolina. They had a 3-0 lead, but in a game that saw about 49 pitchers throw, Coastal gets a bases-loaded hit by pitch in the eighth to win 8-7. So it's clear that they're playing a lot better than the team that Georgia Southern saw about a month ago in Patriots Point, where the Eagles outscored them 18-7. That was a great offensive night for the Eagles because you saw everybody do something, and you also saw a lot of guys get some work. Now, who knows what tonight is going to be like? It could be a 2.5-hour, 2-1 game, or it could be a game just like we saw earlier this year in Mount Pleasant, but you've got to be ready for everything, and especially with a first-time starter going like Jalen Payton.
Jalen Payton will go for Georgia Southern, and it was a 18-7 victory for Georgia Southern back on the 24th of February up at Patriots Point. And the same guy that threw that game, at least started in that game, C.J. Cerwinski, is going against Georgia Southern again tonight. The only reason that's kind of odd in my mind, his only other start was against Georgia Southern.
Yeah.
Back in the first midweek of the season. He's only had 2 appearances. He faced Alabama the following weekend after that start against Georgia Southern. But it's odd to say the only 2 times he's thrown were within about a week and a half of each other. The only start was against Georgia Southern a month ago.
3 weeks in between live appearances, that would lend you to believe that it's probably going to be a staff night for the Cougars. Now, granted, he could come out and throw 5-6 innings and we look silly, and College of Charleston comes down and wins here for just the second time in the last 5 seasons. Both teams used all-staff approaches in that game in Mount Pleasant, and remember, Hayden Harris started that night.
Yep.
And Rodney Hennon told us, look, if he can go 3-4 innings, we'll see what we can get out of him. Granted, he only went 2 because CFC had a 2-0 lead in that game. Trotter Harlan hit a 2-out, 2-run double, but then the third inning arrived, and so did Georgia Southern's offense. He scored 9 runs in that third inning. They put up 6 more in the fourth, so it was 15-2, and we're trying to remember where the car was parked, especially since Bill had to take it to go pick up dinner, and then he parked in the spot that we were not expecting. It was a fun night to see all the offense, but at the same time, you know, CFC's playing better, and they want to get a little bit of revenge.
Then this weekend, Georgia Southern will make the trip up to Decatur and take on the Georgia State Panthers Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. 6 o'clock the first pitch on Thursday, 3 o'clock on Friday, 2 o'clock on Saturday, and we will have everything for you from Decatur and Panthersville. And this is a Georgia State team. To be completely blunt, they have gone through the gauntlet as far as schedule is concerned. I think number 4 strength of schedule non-conference as far as D1 baseball's RPI is concerned. I'm going to go through it.
You're going to understand what their record is when we say it from who all they have played.
So their record is 5-21, 1-2 in conference play. They opened up the weekend with a 4-game set against West Virginia. They took 2 out of 4. Against number 14 at the time, West Virginia. They outscored them 20-4 on the second game of the Saturday doubleheader. 2 of those games went into extra innings. They split the extra inning affairs. They fell to number 7, Georgia, that first midweek. They had a 4-game set against Vanderbilt and they got the Friday night game against Vandy. Now, that wasn't Kumar Rocker.
Yeah, that wasn't not Rocker, not Leiter. That was.
The next week, their midweek was against Georgia Tech, who was number 10 at the time. They beat them 10-1 in Atlanta, the Rush Chandler version of Atlanta. Then they were on the road at Tennessee, fell in each of those three. They faced number 2 Florida in that midweek, lost 5-1. So you're looking at 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Their first 14 games were against teams that were ranked, the lowest was number 17, and that was Tennessee.
Yeah, and 4 more games after that also against Power 5. So their first 18 games against Power 5 schools, and you can look at it as well. We're trying to make a little bit of dough. We're trying to beef up some strength of schedule. We'll take some licks because we have a young team. But Brad Stromdahl, he's not messing around.
Stromdahl play.
He is not messing around.
The next three were against Kentucky. They got swept by the Wildcats, then lost on Tuesday, the previous Tuesday, at Clemson 7-2. Then they stepped into Sun Belt Conference play. They fell in 2 out of 3 against Monroe. They got the Friday night game 4-3 and then lost the final two. And then something that kind of surprised me, we had seen the wins against Power 5, but they lost all 5 games this past week, lost against Mercer up at the Georgia State Baseball Complex on Tuesday. They did a little bit of a weird weekend this past week, which allowed them to not have a midweek this week.
Right. They just finished up yesterday.
Correct. So they had Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, 4-game series against Kennesaw State. The Friday and Saturday was against Kennesaw at the Georgia State Baseball Complex, so a home game for them. They fell in both of those. Then Sunday and Monday, they made their way to Stillwell Stadium to take on Kennesaw State and fell in both of those, a combined 21-5 loss against Kennesaw State, and then they will welcome in Georgia Southern this week. So the schedule for Georgia State has not been kind, but there are also games that with the Power 5 wins, you would have expected to kind of translate into wins later on with the ULMs, the Kennesaw States, the Mercer, that they haven't. And so it's a team that has been on a pretty healthy losing streak. They've lost their last 7.
Their pitching has been a source of much frustration for about a decade, and this goes back to maybe even beyond the Greg Frady years. I know they were successful in their brief stint in the Colonial, went to the NCAA tournament 9 years ago. But they've got some hitters. Josh Smith is one of the better left fielders in this league that nobody's talking about. Preseason all-Sunbelt guy, Elian Marejo, can catch. He can play first. He can DH. He's been DHing mostly. Will Mize at shortstop was somebody they added last year, hit very well. They were doing pretty well a year ago before the shutdown, at least offensively, but schedule-wise, they had a 4-game series against St. Peter's, and unfortunately St. Peter's is one of the worst programs nationally, and it's been that way for about 10 years now. Griffin Chaney has been there for about 10 years. He's the Luke Leonard, the Ryan Blanton, the Justin Jones, the guy that's always there for Georgia State, and he's the one that takes the mantle. He's playing his third different position in the last 3 years. They're trying to figure out their pitching, at least in terms of weekend starting, but it's just something that they have not been consistent with. Sometimes they'll come out and they'll give you a really good effort, but those are few and far between. You've got the ability to get to their bullpen. It's been that way for a while. They can hit, though, and the fact that they're 5-21 will make you think that this should be a walkover, but the schedule will tell you that they are battle-tested. They may not be battle-successful, but they are battle-tested, and you know that with Georgia Southern coming to the complex this weekend, it's their – not their Super Bowl, but their World Series. It is, because they know the program that Georgia Southern is, and they know the program they're trying to be. Now, they've done some fine things, and I think that Stromdahl is going to get them on track. They're going to improve a lot more quickly, coming over after a program at GGC that he created.
Yeah.
Brought Dalton Martinez with him. He's in his second year as the hitting coach. They're going to win eventually. They're just so young right now. And who knows, they could take 2 or 3 this weekend. Baseball is baseball. We know that. But it certainly favors Georgia Southern. They still have to perform.
Yeah. I'm in a weird place because we know how we feel about Georgia State. But I've known Brad Stromdahl, Dalton Martinez for a lot of years. Over in his time at Georgia Gwinnett, when I was with the Sun Belt League, they Dalton was a coach in the Sun Belt League. Strom was heavily involved with the Sun Belt. So I absolutely love Brad Stromdahl. He's one of my favorite baseball people. Dalton Martinez, right in that same mold. He's been with Strom for so many years over with the Grizzlies at GGC. But they're at Georgia State. So I don't know. I don't know. I know how I feel, but I don't know how I want to feel.
Let's just say it will be good to catch up.
It will. They've got their volunteer assistant, Brandon Frazier, was at Georgia Gwinnett, one of the best to ever play for the Grizzlies. He was in the Sun Belt League. He and Parker Beatier were actually teammates with the Gwinnett Tide. That was coached by Dalton Martinez, so you get about 37 degrees of separation there.
Just put all the pieces together.
But it'll be good to catch up with those guys. But you talked about the pitching side. You kind of expected Tyler Cook to be in the mix of things as far as possibly a Friday night starter for this Georgia State team.
Yeah.
He hasn't started a game. He's made 6 appearances with a 4.26 ERA, just 6 innings of work.
Which tells me that they look at him as being more valuable as 2 innings here, 2 innings there, 3 innings here, 1.5 innings there, or whatever. You don't want to have to use him for just one game. You want him available as much as possible. And there's more than one way to skin a cat. We know that, and we've seen Greg Freddy tried to do that in a lot of different ways. That's why he doesn't have a job anymore. But anyway, with Georgia State, Tyler Cook is somebody that we're going to see this weekend for sure. And I would guess that Ryan Watson is going to be the number one guy on Thursday. But having just gotten off a 4-game series that just finished yesterday, that could be up in the air.
We shall see how it plays out. It's Georgia Southern, Georgia State, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday from just outside of downtown in Decatur. 6 o'clock first pitch on Thursday, 3 o'clock on Friday, 2 o'clock on Saturday. And then, as the Sun Belt always does, we'll break for the Easter weekend and have Sunday to spend with your family, your loved ones, anybody else you want to spend it with, I guess. But it all starts tonight, 6 o'clock first pitch against the College of Charleston. We'll be on the air at 5:30 this evening on the Georgia Southern Sports Network with the Eagle on Deck Circle. That'll wrap things up for this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. We will talk to you tonight against the Sea of Sea Cougars for Georgia Southern Baseball. For the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, this is Colin Lacey saying so long, everybody, on the Georgia Southern Sports Network from Learfield IMG College.
Been listening to Inside Eagle Nation, powered by Learfield, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.